Hello there, everybody. This is Brett Shishkoff, and I have sitting next to me my cohort in crime, Brian Hawkins. Why don't you say hello to everybody?
Hello, everybody.
This is the No Look Pass, and we talk sports, and that's what we love, and that's what we're going to do. So, we had our first look at the Bears this weekend against the Texans. What did you see in the game yesterday?
Well, I saw they got off to a pretty good start. The offense looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that in the second half, they did nothing. And I think that's because, first of all, the offense couldn't get anything going. And the Houston Texans defense, they did a lot of stunts that the Bears weren't prepared for. And sometimes I think instead of Cutler taking a 5 or 6 step drop, sometimes in order to thwart that pass rush and those stunts, maybe he could just do a 3 step or maybe roll out or something like that to get the ball out. And they've got great receivers. So I don't really understand why that all happened in the second half where they didn't move the ball and didn't score.
Yeah, I definitely think we saw that a little bit even in the Thursday night game with Carolina in, you know, Super Bowl rematches. That's how they adjusted to the Broncos defense, was doing that exact thing that you said, is they cut down Cam's going back 5 step drops to 3 step drops and getting the ball out of his hands quickly. That's what you definitely need to do when you have a pass rush, you know, JJ Watt on the other side. You know that guy's coming fast, so you need to be able to have routes. You need to be able to call those hot routes and be able to get the ball out of your hands as quick as possible if it's dumping it off to Langford or whoever it ends up being in the backfield for the Bears, or if it's, you know, getting it to your tight end, just doing it in a flat type situation. There's a lot of ways to counteract a blitzing package or a defense that brings the heat every single play with good pass rushing. And yeah, I definitely agree that that is definitely a route that they need to go. And some of these teams that they're going to face, when you're facing Minnesota, that's a great defense with a good pass rush. So you're going to have these, you know, quicker dropbacks to get the ball out of your hand as quick as possible. I think that I was impressed to see how well Alshon Jeffrey was doing. Didn't really see too much from Kevin White. Did he have any type of receptions, or how many snaps was he out there?
I don't remember, but I do. The play that I do remember wasn't a very good one for him. Mm-hmm. He ran a pattern, and Cutler was expecting him to go towards the sideline, and he stopped, and that's when Cutler threw his interception.
Okay.
And that was one of the two big negative plays that changed the momentum of the game. You know, that was an unfortunate play by him.
Mm-hmm. That's what you get. He's technically not a rookie anymore because he technically was on the Bears last year, but he's playing as a rookie this year. And so you're going to have those mistakes, and it's just part of the growing pains. And hopefully the kid will bounce back quickly. And as the season goes on, those little things will become fewer and fewer. And he was hurt throughout some of training camp. That does affect being able to get that rapport with Cutler. And so I think as the season goes on, you're going to see Kevin White improve because he has a lot of talent. We know that from college. And so it's just being able to put that talent and having a cohesive new unit between the two of them. And then I think if Alshon works with him on specific route running and what he's doing, I think that'll bode well for that offense. What else did you see? How was that defense? What did you notice with the Bears defense? They hold up pretty well. What do you think there, Brian?
I think so. Just to go back a bit, that question you asked about White, he had 3 catches for 34 yards. As far as the defense is concerned, I think they did a great job, especially in the first half, holding down Houston's offense, where, you know, to the point where the game was manageable for the offense of the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem again is in the second half, and the Bears could not put it together any long drives, the defense had to constantly come back out and play. And, you know, they obviously were a bit winded, and they didn't have a chance to, you know, hold Houston to, you know, the 13 points that they scored in the first half.
Right.
Well, the first and the third quarter. So that was the problem. But other than that, I think that they have an excellent and the part of the defense that we were worried about, the secondary, there was an early interception by Terry Porter, and I thought that was great. So the only thing we have to look forward to now is getting McPhee back. Of course, that won't be for a while. But, yeah, I think the defense did pretty well.
Yeah, I... Did they have a pass rush? Did they get to Osweiler? Because I know on that pick, Terry Porter, I'm not entirely sure how the pass rush was. Was it caused by the pass rush itself, or was it just a mistake of just not seeing the guy in the secondary?
I do remember that Floyd did get to Osweiler at one point. And so the pass rush was there. They were putting pressure on him, at least.
Okay.
And the front four were doing their job. So overall, I would give the defensive line probably a C+.
Okay.
And the defense itself, I would definitely say C+ overall, both the line and the defensive backs.
And they're still dealing with injuries on that side of the ball too. So if those guys can all get back healthy, who knows where the Bears defense can end up. We know that John Fox is a defensive minded coach, and so he can get a lot out of players. So I'm excited to kind of see how this team progresses. They have a rookie quarterback coming in with Carson Wentz coming up this week against the Eagles. Hopefully they can pressure the kid and be able to get their first win, because they're already behind the rest of the division. Everybody else yesterday won. The Lions won in a shootout against the Colts. And then we had the Packers overtook the Jaguars in the last seconds of the game as well. And then Minnesota just pretty much crushed the Titans. So neither one of them had as difficult a matchup as facing the division champs from the South last year. So we'll see how it goes this week. I think they have a better chance of beating the Eagles. A little bit of a tough defense, but not anything that I think the Bears should be able to overcome.
Yeah, like you said, they won't face another defense like Houston's until week 8 when they play the Vikings. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a couple of things. The Bears have the second easiest schedule. Mm-hmm. So that is not a problem. They should be able to get lots of wins. The other thing is, I don't know, you may not have heard Dan Hampton's tirade.
He always has those after Bears games.
Against the coaching staff. He felt that playing Cody Whitehair at center after he'd been practicing at guard was a wrong move. He said they have the Larson, and he should have started. And when you remember they had that fumble or that bad exchange when the Bears were going for, you know, just inches to get a first down, and they had that exchange. Mm-hmm. And he felt that if they had Larson in the game, that that wouldn't have happened. And as a matter of fact, I remember on Fox News, their final sports show at 10 p.m., they had video of Whitehair and Cutler warming up, and they had trouble exchanging the ball then.
Oh, wow.
So unfortunately, it happened in the game. And so that's one of the things that he points to. But he thinks that Cody's going to be a fine player, but maybe it wasn't the right time to start him.
Yep, I can agree with you on that one. Maybe giving him a few more snaps and practices and stuff before you put him out into a game against one of the better defenses that they're going to see all year. So I know the Packers and Vikings will be playing each other next week, so that'll be the Sunday night game. So one of them will lose. maybe, you know, very rarely does a tie. So one of them probably will have a loss after that. So if the Bears can win, then they at least know that they won't be the only one in last place. And then the Lions, I can't recall who they play, unfortunately. I think it's an easier matchup for them, so they might get another win.
But that was surprising. I didn't expect them to win.
Against the Colts?
Well, yeah, I thought they would be at, you know, at Indianapolis. I thought they might be the doormat of the league or the division, but it doesn't look that way.
Yeah, they got a lot of weapons. Matthew Stafford, even though they got rid of Calvin Johnson, they've got quite a few weapons of, like, really good role players. And so if all of them can kind of keep their... what they were doing last year, Marvin Jones was a pretty decent receiver from Cincinnati that they picked up, and then they also brought the veteran Anquan Boldin over from San Francisco, and he's a little bit older, but he's going to be able to get you receptions. He kind of reminds me a little bit of a similar toughness of like a Larry Fitzgerald type of guy. So the Lions, are that defense, it was just a shootout. Neither one of the defenses showed up at all. I think it was 38-35 or something was the end score, and so they just kept going back and forth to each other, and at one point the Lions had an 18-point lead and lost that by the end of the third quarter, and so there was a lot of shootout going on in that last quarter. It was just going back and forth. So lots of scoring this week, not too many defensive battles. The only one that I really kind of saw myself was, there's two. Miami and Seattle game was surprising that it was the score. A lot of people had a blowout happening, that Seattle was just going to run all over the Dolphins, but it didn't happen that way. Both defenses played really well. And then we had the Broncos and Carolina game. That was also a good defensive battle.
Well, the Lions play Tennessee next week, so...
Okay.
Maybe it'll be another offensive blowout.
Yeah, we'll see. They struggled a little bit, the Vikings, at first. Dick LeBeau defense isn't always the easiest to figure out. He is now their defensive coordinator over there. So we'll see. Maybe the Titans can sneak one. They're becoming a running team. They have DeMarco Murray, and then they have a rookie over there, Derrick Henry, who maybe if they get that running game going and keep the ball out of Stafford's hands, you might see a upset there, because I think the Lions will probably be favored for that game. Anything else you want to talk about the first weekend of football? Anything that stuck out to you?
No, I think that's pretty much it for the Bears.
Alrighty. I think, if you don't mind, we will move on to our baseball teams. I think we'll start with the Sox. Just get them out of the way as quick as possible, because like I think that's where that's everybody's doing that. So, you know, they've had it. They had their series against Kansas City. They don't do well against their division. Now they're playing the Indians. So
that's bad.
It's just going to get worse. They don't play well in their division. They're 4-10 against the Royals this year. Sale went. He gave up 8 hits and only 2 runs, and there was no run support at all for the Sox yesterday. So... Sox are who they are, and just probably waiting to get the season over with and go play golf.
15 games out of first, 68-74. At least they don't have the worst record in the American League.
Well, that's something, I suppose.
That would be, you know, if it wasn't for Minnesota,
yeah,
would be in last place. then there's Tampa Bay, and there's also the Angels, which is surprising, in Oakland. Of course, they destroyed their team a couple seasons ago when they traded what's the guy who's with the Mets now,
Yunis Cespedes.
Yes. So, and then they tried to go with all those pitchers, and now they left. But I don't know. The White Sox are, I guess, playing out the string. They're bringing up prospects and taking a look and seeing what they can get done for next season, I guess.
So I do have a question for you. So on Friday or Saturday, Rich Hill was pitching. He was part of Oakland, and he went over to the Dodgers. He was pitching a perfect game. Got to the eighth inning, and he was about ready to go back out, and the manager decided to bring in the bullpen. He was upset. If you were the pitcher, how would you feel about that?
I'd be very upset.
Mm-hmm.
And was there any Was there ever any reason given why the manager did that? Was it pitch count? Was it...
No, I think it's because they have been dealing with injuries. That's what the announcers kind of were saying, is that they've... because they don't have Kershaw, they're trying to preserve, like, their pitching as much as possible going into the playoffs. And so that was their main concern, is they didn't want to just push something. And so literally the next batter up that came up for the bullpen, he got a hit, and it ruined the perfect game for Rich Hill. And so...
Now, which manager was this again?
The Dodgers coach. Who is it now?
Oh.
Is it Matting? No.
No, it's not Mattingly. He's Tampa Bay now.
Yeah, I don't remember who the coach is for, and so I would have been upset, because I used to pitch when I was a kid, and like, if I was on, you don't take me out. Like, I made it perfectly clear, like, I'm not tired, let's do this. Like, let's get this game in the bag. A perfect game doesn't happen very often. And he was rolling. He had already 9 strikeouts by the time he got into the end of the 7th inning. He only got into a full count 3 times the entire game. So he was just on. Like, you don't do... Like, I just don't think you do that. Like, if I was the coach, I'd let the kid pitch. Like, he's not old. He's a relatively younger kid. I don't think he was going to break down from just pitching the extra couple innings and possibly getting... having his name put in the record books for a perfect game, because it is such a rare occurrence. So, a little bit off of the White Sox, which that... I thought was more exciting to talk about, more from that angle of a perfect game than what the Sox have been doing.
Well, I'm surprised you haven't heard more about that. You know, I would think that he just killed his team, because I can't imagine any pitcher wanting to pitch for him when he does something like that. I mean, yep. You just don't take a perfect game away from somebody like that.
They had a lead. They were up like 7-0 or something at the time, or 9-0. So I think it had a little bit more to do with, they had a comfortable lead. If they were in a closer game, maybe he didn't make that move, but because they already had, like, they had the game in hand, I think that had a little bit to do with it more than anything. But either way, if I was coach, I'd just let the kid go. Like, let him be able to finish this game out.
Wow.
That's
wrong.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I was, as an old, you know, younger pitcher, I felt for the kid. I felt for Rich Hill big time. We'll move on to the Cubs, if you don't mind.
Sure.
There wasn't really much to talk about with the Sox, because we just want to move on from them anyway. So, here's my thought about the Cubs. They're starting a series against St. Louis tonight. I think they need to take advantage of this. You get a chance to be able to knock out a division rival from being able to possibly be in the playoffs to face later. You do it. Like, I know that you have a potential of letting the Mets in, but if it's in your own division, you knock out the Cardinals. I don't think you let the Cardinals sneak in and face you later on. They're just a highly motivated team to kind of come back and do something dangerous maybe against the Cubs. But we did talk about this Friday about who would you rather face, and I said that I'd rather face the Cardinals. So it's a tough spot to be as the Cubs. You don't ever want to just let games go. So how would you play it?
Well, obviously, yeah, put it in their minds, put in the minds of the Cardinals that you are a tough team to beat, mm-hmm. and you definitely want to, if possible, sweep them. Do you know how many games they're playing for this series?
I'm not sure how many it is, no.
Okay.
I don't know if it's a 3-game series, because I don't know who they play this weekend, but...
I don't know.
I don't know if it's a makeup game or what, because I thought I saw something on the schedule that they're playing the Cardinals this weekend, so maybe it's a makeup game. I'm not entirely sure what the schedule consists of for this week for the Cubs. But either way, I know that they have quite a few games still in their division to finish up with. There's not a lot of games left for the season. So, most of those games will be within their division that they have to just finish out.
They should, definitely, I don't know if they can knock St. Louis out of the playoff picture completely, mm-hmm. but they definitely need to plant the seed in their head that, they're the superior team and St. Louis has no chance. I don't know if they can do that, because St. Louis is pretty disciplined and they're a tough-minded team to mm-hmm. begin with. But they definitely need to, get some wins against this team. They can't go to St. Louis and drop the series, certainly. If they can win the series, I think that'll be good. If every time they play St. Louis, they beat St. Louis, it'll be good.
Yeah, I think they do have the opportunity of clinching if they win the series against the Cardinals, the next series, whenever it is, if it starts tonight or if it's this weekend. Like I said, I can't remember. But they do have the opportunity of clinching their spot, finally, with a couple wins against the Cardinals, which would be nice.
I think they're, what, 5 games is their number now? Or?
It's close. Yeah, they're very, very close. So you know that they want to finish that off as soon as possible, clinch it, and then basically just keep the home field advantage. That's pretty much all they want to do. And so, other than that, they're doing good. They're just staying steady. They're not really taking the pedal off the metal all that much. They had a tough series against Houston, which, you know, they're a tough team. What was this series? I don't even remember. Did they split, or did the Cubs win that series?
Which one? The
against Houston yesterday and this past weekend.
Well, unfortunately, they won the series. They won 2 games out of 3.
Okay.
But did you hear about the bet?
Uh-uh.
Well, there was a bet between the mayor of Houston and the mayor of Chicago, because the Bears and the Cubs played Houston teams.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I don't know what they're doing over there. Probably just concentrating on raising taxes at City Hall. But it was a bad bet, because each Cubs game was worth 1 point and the Bears game was worth 2. So right away, they should have known that they had a little chance to win, because Houston was favored, and the odds that the Cubs would have swept the Houston baseball team were, you know, pretty high. So it looked like we were going to lose to begin with, and in fact that we did lose, even though the Cubs did win 2 games with the Bears loss, because the Bears game was worth 2 points. So
it's 3-2 basically.
Yeah, it looks like they'll be eating pizza, Chicago deep dish, and in Houston's mayor's office.
Oh, okay. Well, they get a nice treat. They'll have an upgrade from the pizza that they probably are eating on a normal basis. So, good for them.
And it looks like the Cubs have 3 games against the Cardinals. Today, Tuesday, and then Wednesday.
Okay.
And then I don't know who comes in for the weekend.
Okay. Yeah. So, I think if they win the series, I think they possibly clinch the division. I think that's what I read. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. I think you'll have a very motivated Cardinals team, because they're fighting for their playoff lives. So it'll be a fun, I think it'll be a playoff atmosphere for, you know, the Cubs are going to probably take it pretty seriously themselves. They don't want to make it easy on the Cardinals. And I think there'll be some, those will be 3 good games that a lot of people will be interested in watching as we're coming down the crunch time for playoff seeding.
So, be good.
I think that's about it for baseball, unless you noticed anything else that you'd like to touch on.
Well, there was one question, and I felt, considering the way he pitched last year, Jake Arrieta was the man.
Okay.
But this year, there's been some talk that he may be, when it comes to playoff time, the number 3 starter, not the number 1 guy, and that the number 1 guy should be John Lester.
Okay.
So does that bother you at all? Does it make you skittish? Because Arrieta, for all practical intents and purposes, has been the ace.
I think that when you're going into the playoffs, I think experience is a huge thing. And Lester's been there way more than Arrieta has. And so I'm okay with it. I would think if you had somebody that was, like, talent-wise a step down, then you might have a reason for it. But Lester isn't that much of a difference between Arrieta. Like, there are times where Arrieta, he's just a dominant. It looks like he's just a programmed robot to pitch. But I think in this case, going into a playoff where you have a guy who's he's won World Series with the Red Sox, you kind of have to go with that. I think it's just a smart choice to start your series with a guy who's been there, who knows how to deal with those situations a little bit more than what Arrieta does. And you could even say the same thing about Lackey and his experience of being in the playoffs just multiple times with multiple teams, with the Angels and the Cardinals. And so, but I think, yeah, that no matter which way you go, if you go Arrieta first or you go Lester first, you're going to have a good starter. But I can kind of see where Joe Madden wants to go with Lester instead.
You're talking John Lester, Kyle Hendricks, and then Arrieta, and then if I guess Lackey's available. Oh.
Okay, well, Hendricks is on fire. He's been a very, very steady pitching too. So. That one is more of a question mark for me. I'd still go Arrieta 2 and then, Lackey or Hendricks or whatever. That would be kind of the way I would go. But Joe Madden's the manager, and he's been making lots of good decisions throughout this season and last season, so I'm not going to argue with him. He's not a guy that he has an idea of what he's doing. He's not, like Robin Ventura, completely lost as a manager.
Okay.
I'm okay with that. We'll just touch on the Bulls and Blackhawks real quick. The Bulls, pretty much the only thing I have is Jerry Reinsdorf he is in the Basketball Hall of Fame. He just got inducted with Shaquille O'Neal, Yao Ming, and Allen Iverson. I remember watching Yao Ming. I'm not entirely sure. Like, he was tall, and I didn't think he was in the NBA for very long, but okay. But Shaq, dominant player. I remember watching the game when he basically tore down the backboard.
I still remember that play where he is running full court, and he dives for the basketball and slides on the floor through the lane. But here's a quick fact about the Hall of Fame. Did you know that it has nothing to do with the NBA?
I did not know that. I think it's the Basketball Hall of Fame, so that makes sense.
Yeah, so sometimes the choices that they make are not necessarily based on just basketball performance or, what you've done for the NBA. So
I think maybe the possibility of the reason why for Yao Ming is because he really grew the Asian demographic. Like, when he became part of the Houston Rockets, they did say how big of a difference it made in the Chinese culture of, like, looking at basketball as a possible sport that they would enjoy playing. And so it's grown their sport quite a bit. So I could see it from the international side of things, because before him, I can't really think of too many Asian descent players that really stick out in my mind. Like, I think,
I can't either. Yeah, but he was huge in China. I remember, that when they had the Beijing Olympics, even though he wasn't, I don't remember if he played for the team because I think he was injured, but still, he made an appearance, and there was a hand for him. So
I think I remember him playing on a limited basis, but yeah, he was playing injured, and so but yeah, I think that's probably where they were looking at it from the international basketball side of things, which makes sense in that aspect of it. But Allen Iverson, I think the big one that sticks out for my mind for him is just practice. We're talking about practice.
Do you understand that, though? I saw a documentary, and it explained why he made that statement.
Okay.
I don't know if I remember completely the reasoning behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I thought, okay, well, he has a point.
Well, I kind of agree when you have a specific player who, is relatively dominant at his position, and he was at the time. I think it's really difficult to be able to kind of, like, look at practice, every single practice, as an important part of your day. Like, you really, if you need a day off or you need to take it easy on certain days, maybe that's just what you need to do. And that's where nowadays, like, if you played in the NBA today, that's a normal occurrence. Like, guys taking off days of practice or games or whatever. And so I can kind of see it from his point of view to a certain extent as well. Is like, yeah, practice is important, but if you're in the middle of your season and you're playing almost every day, maybe you do need a day off, and they do that now. So I can kind of understand that. And then with Jerry Reinsdorf bringing it back to the Bulls, it makes sense. Like putting together the teams that he put together for the 90s and how dominant they were, he has to be considered. Unfortunately, with what the Bulls are doing now, who knows?
Well, I wonder how much hands-on he has. I don't think he has as much today
as he did
as
before.
He did in the 90s.
Yeah.
And one other thing about Allen Iverson, there was some talk about his acceptance speech. And for those of you who are Allen Iverson fans or just NBA fans, mm-hmm. you know, just with that comment he made, that he was not always a coaching favorite. But during his acceptance speech, he broke down and cried, mm-hmm. and he thanked his college coach, John Thompson, mm-hmm. and even thanked Larry Brown.
Larry Brown's a great coach.
For, mm-hmm. you know, being his coach.
Yeah.
So it was a very emotional time for him. And he's had some hard times since he's left the NBA in terms of having lost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So, he was really a great player. But,
yes.
Mm-hmm. I still can't remember exactly what the reasoning was for him saying that. And the thing about Jerry Reinsdorf, as I mentioned, I think his son is more in charge of the Bulls now than Reinsdorf is,
okay.
the day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
But he did put together some great teams, and he paid for some great teams. He paid Michael Jordan $36 million per season, I think, the last two seasons that the Bulls were together,
mm-hmm.
during that era. And
well worth the money.
Yeah. And I think, he deserves it. He's always been involved in the NBA, and
mm-hmm.
he's made a tremendous impact.
Yeah.
I think he's more involved in the White Sox side of it than the Bulls nowadays.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, but the only problem is that Scottie Pippen was there, and also, believe it or not, this might surprise you, Phil Jackson, as he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, but Michael Jordan had a previous engagement, and he couldn't be there. And
okay.
when they interviewed him about it, he said, well, I believe Michael. He says he's not available because, you know, Michael is now a big mogul.
Right.
So.
Yep. The other thing I did see is, like, Dwayne Wade in the news with his cousin, what happened. He said that when he signed with the Bulls, he really didn't have an idea of why he was signing with the Bulls. But after seeing how much violence has been occurring here in Chicago, he realized that he has a voice, and he's able to maybe influence some people who have money, who are a little bit wealthy. And he's like, I'm not afraid to call some people out to help with us coming together in unity. And he goes, we shouldn't be separate. We should be working with the police department. And he goes, and so there was a lot that he said in this speech when they were opening up this new center with his mom. His mom's a pastor, reverend, like she speaks at a church. And so they opened up a new facility for kids and a school. And so he says that he's realized that he came back to Chicago for a reason, and he really wasn't paying that much attention to Chicago while he was down in Miami. Maybe he should have paid more attention and been able to put more assets there here. And so he's looking forward to being here and being able to bring some hope back to the city, hopefully with bringing Chicago. He believes this team can bring a championship and bringing a positive spin on the Bulls, and hopefully causing some of the violence and frustration that's around the city to decrease just a tad. Because he said even when the first championships were happening with the Bulls in the 90s, that the crime rate was at a very, very high rate, even higher than it is now. And so he said that it did eventually start to calm things down. And so, but it was the Bulls and others, teams working with these parts of the city and trying to inspire maybe these lower income sides of parts of the city to that they are capable of doing a lot. And so that kind of bodes well, and I like that part of Dwayne Wade, of him noticing this, and it unfortunately had to happen to someone in his family for him to really kind of come out and say all these things, and it hit him and his family pretty hard. I think you've seen that a lot, even with football this week. You saw a lot of that unity of the team, some of the teams deciding instead of just single players kneeling down. You saw the Seattle Seahawks, they locked arms together of like a sign of unity, of working together as people. And plus it being 9/11 yesterday, there was a lot of that, of trying to bring back the unity that we had after 9/11 happened. I don't know if you remember it, but it was just like everybody was willing to help everybody. You had patriotism all over the place with people having flags on their cars, and people were just a lot nicer after that, that specific, you know, those few weeks after 9/11 happened. So
yeah,
I think it's just something that sports can inspire people to change, if they're doing it in the right way. And so I like what the players have been saying and doing as a whole. Yesterday, you saw that a lot. So we'll see. Hopefully we can kind of start to see a change here with Dwayne Wade and a couple of these other players sticking together and trying to help inspire the rest of the city and country to make a turnaround. But other than that, do you have anything else that you saw for Bulls news? I thought we were going to skim right past that, but apparently it got into a good conversation.
No. There was a story, and I can't remember what it is now, but... no.
All right.
Nothing.
Well, we can move on to the Blackhawks. Yes. They are... getting ready. They're having the last few exhibition games for the World Cup of Hockey. I finally figured out what the real name of that tournament was called. So that's a positive. They're finishing exhibition games here. I think it's Thursday is the last set of games, and then this weekend starts the actual pool play. And then we also have actual training camp starting next week for the Blackhawks, so that'll be fun to be able to start seeing what the young kids look like in training camp. And did you see this, that they're not going to be opening up training camp in Notre Dame this year? Did you see that?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, they're actually going to be opening up here in Chicago. So that is a little bit different. They've been doing that for quite a few years, of opening up in Notre Dame. Not anything big deal there player-wise, but it does kind of affect, you know, those people who are at Notre Dame or in that area that wanted to go and see some Blackhawk hockey and pay attention to it, at least for those few weeks. They don't have that opportunity to do so.
Well, first preseason game is Wednesday, September 28th, against Pittsburgh here at the UIC. Or UC.
Unite Center, yep. Madhouse on Madison.
Yes.
And hopefully we'll hear some Chelsea Dagger over and over again as the season starts getting going. That is a great tune that now always puts a smile on my face. No matter where I hear it, I think of Blackhawks goals and wins. So I'm looking forward to the season getting started. And so then we'll have some football and hockey going on, and then shortly after that we'll have three of the major sports going at the same time for a few months there, so that'll be fun.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. Well, that was basketball related to Bulls. It wasn't specific about the Bulls.
Oh, okay.
But I think Sports Illustrated came out with top 100 players.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that stood out in my mind is that J.R. Smith from Cleveland Cavaliers was, I think, 96 or 97, and the people who were 96 and 95 were folks you may or may not have heard of. He was pretty low on the list. I don't know where Jimmy Butler fit in, if he fit in at all.
Okay.
But we'll have to take a look at that for next time.
I would think Jimmy should be on there. If J.R. Smith is on there, I would put Jimmy Butler ahead of J.R. Smith, unless they're putting in other things of maybe stuff that they do off the court. I don't know. I would think that Jimmy Butler should probably be on that. I don't really have anything else Blackhawks related. I know Hossa was kind of dealing with a little bit of a foot injury for Team Europe. So Other than that, it sounds like he should be fine to get back going. So other than that, there's not much that I have with the Blackhawks. What about yourself? Are you good?
I'm good.
Anything else that you want to add? Not related to any of our Chicago teams. I know we covered quite a bit of other stuff, but if you had something else that you wanted to ask or chat about real quick.
You probably already heard Tim Tebow. He was signed to a minor league contract by the Mets. $100,000. And is it class AA, I think? Yeah.
Okay.
And so his little tryout worked. He left an opportunity to go and play baseball. And he's going to do that at the same time that he's commentating or being an analyst for college football. For who is that? ESPN or Fox? I forget. One of those entities. So, but the thing of it is, do you ever think he'll make it to the majors? I say no.
I'm with you on that. And I even, one of the Cubs players actually spoke on it. And I read the article last week, and I just can't remember who said it. But he basically was talking about how in the tryout, they were impressed with his hitting and the power. And the person, the Cubs player, oh man, I wish I could remember who said it. He basically said it's totally different of pitch, like hitting off of a pitching machine and hitting in a actual game off of a real life pitcher that can throw 100 miles an hour. Like, he goes, most people probably, if they practice for a few weeks, probably could make some contact on a pitching machine that was pitching them 80-90 miles an hour. You probably would be able to do it at a pretty good rate. So he goes, I'm not really impressed by it. So I do kind of agree, and maybe he's just going to be like a utility outfielder type of guy. I don't see it going very well. If an athlete like Michael Jordan couldn't really make the transition over to it, and he used to play baseball as well, just the same, kind of the same mentality as I played in high school, I might as well try and play it in major leagues. Like, I don't think Tebow is even going to get as far as Michael Jordan did.
Well, they're sitting in a class AA, and I think that's an indication. So
yeah,
it's just I think I don't know, maybe publicity, a chance to fill the seats someplace,
right?
And I think that player's right, but the professional baseball players aren't liking this at all. That's the second player, and there are probably others who've had a negative view on this whole thing, saying I can't do it, and I don't think.
It's because he's starting so late.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest one that I've seen. Like, the couple of players that have said something is that literally they've used their entire life to play this sport. And he just thinks, oh, I'm going to be able to pick it up after playing football for all these years and not even picking up a baseball mitt or a bat in many, many years. A lot of these players are just upset that he thinks it's that easy just to be able to pick it up all over again and just be able to compete with all of these players that have been doing it for their entire life as their main sport. So I can understand that. You know, you've put in as much time and energy and blood, sweat, and tears into this, and then you just have a guy who's like, oh, no one wants me in football, I'm going to go to baseball now. Like, that's kind of how they feel.
Yeah.
So I could see that. But I think we're going to stick a nail in this one. I think this show is over. Brian, it's been fun as usual. I look forward to chatting with you next week.
All right.
I am Brett Shishkoff.
And I'm Brian Hawkins.
And this is the No Look Pass. Look forward to talking to you all next week. And enjoy that baseball and some more football. See you next week.